Welcome to Unpacking Peanuts, the podcast where three cartoonists take an in-depth look at
the greatest comic strip of all time,
Peanuts by Charles M. Schulz.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. This is Unpacking Peanuts, and it's an exciting day. This is our 100th episode, Woo! And it also times out just to be about our second anniversary as a podcast. So we are celebrating here. We're so excited that you guys, all our old listeners and all our new listeners, are hanging out here today and celebrating with us. We're going to talk about Peanuts. We're going to hang out with our friends and just have a good time like we do every Tuesday. I'm your host for the proceedings. My name is Jimmy Gownley. I'm also a cartoonist. I did books like the Amelia Rules series, Seven Good Reasons Not to Grow Up, and The Dumbest Idea Ever. Joining me as always are my pals, co-hosts, and fellow cartoonists. He's a playwright and a composer, both for the band Complicated People, as well as for this very podcast. He's the original editor of Amelia Rules, the co-creator of the very first comic book price guide, and the creator of such great strips as Strange Attractors, A Gathering of Spells, and Tangled River. It's Michael Cohen.
Say hey.
And he's the executive producer and writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, a former vice president of Archie Comics, and the creator of the Instagram sensation, Sweetest Beasts. It's Harold Buchholz.
Say ho.
So,
what?
Ho? That could be a two-sided.
I'm being derivative. I'm sorry, Michael.
So we've made it 100 episodes. That seems unlikely, knowing our...
Given the circumstances. And it seems to me that podcasters, when they do reach the magic number, always seem like surprised and stunned.
Right.
I can't believe it.
What on earth?
Well, I can't believe that we had the intention to do it. I know I had the intention to do it, but I'm really happy that we were able to do it. We have to credit all the wonderful people who have been listening for 100 episodes, because if we thought we were just shouting out into a void, it would be a lot less fun to do.
Yeah, we have to credit our editor, Liz, as well, who really got us to do this thing after we had a brief attempt on our own, trying to kind of figure it out. And then Liz kind of came back to Jimmy and me and said, hey, this is something that maybe we should pursue. And I'm so glad you did, Liz.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we would not be here without you. So thank you so much for that.
My pleasure.
So to celebrate our 100th episode, I thought we'd do a couple things. First off, we got a pretty full mailbag. So after the break, we're going to dip into that and see what you characters have been talking about, what's on your minds. But we also decided we are going to randomize our selection of Peanut strips this week. So
wait, let's explain one thing to the new readers. We have read every single strip from the beginning up till 1981, but each year we each pick a bunch we want to talk about, and it usually comes to maybe 40 strips a year. So in this case, we're using the randomizer on Go Comics, where you can just pick a random strip. And we're only picking ones before 1980, from the beginning to 1980. So that's giving us a sample, and we're going to read the ones that none of us have picked before.
Right,
right.
So this will be the first time we're discussing these particular strips.
Yeah, unless we completely forgot and we...
Okay, so one of the things actually that held us off from starting this podcast, we'd made an abortive first attempt, and before Liz came on, was I didn't want to read the comic strips. I intensely did not want to read the comic strips aloud, because reading the comic strips aloud is impossible.
And yet
we have to do it 100 episodes. So this will be the first time. I've never seen any of these, so we'll see how I do, having zero chance to prepare.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of excited, because this is very spontaneous. We don't know what came up on this list, because Liz is a randomizer.
Right, yeah, and I can see Jimmy's like, yeah, and so this guy, he's talking to this, and then looks like a dog.
Oh, speaking of, how is your Ukrainian student doing with Peanuts? Just for our listeners, maybe explain quickly what you're doing in regards to sharing peanuts with this person.
Well, Liz and I are both volunteered to have an English conversation with Ukrainians who want to learn English.
And I'll put the link to the organization in the show notes.
Yeah, it's very good. So my student is sort of an advanced beginner, but she's working hard and on her vocabulary. And I decided I was going to start using peanuts as a way to teach American English, maybe some slang, some new words. And so we've done like four strips where I have her read, and so I can correct her pronunciation. Then I ask her if she understands what they're trying to say. And sometimes she does, sometimes she doesn't. I will explain it. And yeah, she's finding lots of new words. And actually, I think she actually likes it.
Nice.
And she's never seen it. She's never heard of it. She's never didn't know who Snoopy is. So I have to explain, this dog is lying on the roof of his dog.
So, Jimmy, if you get tired of doing the descriptions, we can hire Katarina.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, that's good. I'm so glad. It's really cool that you guys are doing that. And it's cool that she's digging peanuts.
Well, she's aware of it, which makes her probably maybe the only person in Ukraine.
Imagine, though, she'll immigrate to the United States and, like, constantly be in job interviews going, good grief, I can't stand
my stomach hurts.
Well, they don't. Apparently, so far, you know, I know about Italy and know about Ukraine. They don't have comics in the newspaper. Okay. This is a foreign concept.
Yeah. So will she apply to be an ophthalmologist or you talk up amblyopia or whatever?
Maybe we'll get one of those strips. I miss Linus with his glasses. But we don't know what's coming up. This is random.
We don't know what's coming up.
The mystery strip.
So, okay. How about we just get to it? We spin the wheel and we're going to comment on some random peanut strips. This is going to be fun.
All right. Let's do it.
All right, stand by. Ooh, we're going back to the early days with our first one. April 3rd, 1951. Patty and Violet are hanging out outside, and Patty has a little box of something that she's putting away. And Violet says to her, I wouldn't want to marry a real young man. Now they're walking down the street, having finished their game or whatever they were playing. And Patty says, of course not. But you also shouldn't marry one who's too old. Violet thinks about this and asks, how about 23? Patty says, I think that's too old. Then they both sit down and finish their conversation with Patty saying, when men get to be that age, they're usually pretty set in their ways.
This does not pass the Bechdel test. Talking to two girls talking about boys, and they're only like 3 years old.
Could I say something about the Bechdel test?
Sure.
That I think is deeply ironic. You know, Alison Bechdel didn't come up with that test. Her friend did. So I just think it's really ironic that a test that's supposed to gauge representation was named after the person who didn't create it.
One of your friend's last name was Bechdel, too.
Anyway.
You don't know. Anyway, it's good to see a little old Violet with the pigtails and little Patty. Again, I miss them.
Right.
One thing that dawned on us pretty early on was that virtually every peanut strip back in the 50s had one of the four main characters, the four A-list characters. So Charlie Brown, Lucy, Linus, and Snoopy. And here we have an exception to that rule.
Well, because Linus and Lucy didn't exist.
Yeah, right. So Patty and Violet were definitely A-list characters in the beginning. And they've sadly gone to comic book heaven.
For sure. So, like, I still am not 100% convinced of what's going on with Violet's hair. If that's, like, a really flexible pen.
Yeah, I keep thinking it's a brush.
It looks like a brush.
I like the little line between...
Yeah, it's a brush, I guess, yeah.
Patty's pupil, which is really actually... creating the look that she's got a half-opened eye when she's putting this lid on this box. That's something you don't often see
in Peanuts.
And I also like the classic thing that I think like UPA, the animation studio that was very stylized, did. That's what I think of when I see a pattern for clothing in the in that first panel, where we're seeing a leg and then we're seeing, you know, the torso, but the lines on her dress go all the way through the leg as if it was a piece, a single piece of cloth that's not been bent by being bent over, if you know what I mean. It's like the design is consistent all the way through as if it's just been laid on top of this drawing.
Yes.
It does make the character look like a design more than, you know, a three-dimensional character. And that was very popular at the time.
Yeah, the first time I ever saw that technique in a comic was in Love and Rockets, and I just thought it was the coolest, hippest looking thing. It's actually pretty hard to do.
To pull it off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because otherwise, you know, you can't draw attention to it. The idea of doing it this way is to simplify, right? So if it looks like you just scribbled over top of it, you're doing yourself more harm than good.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
All right. The wheel lands on May 28th, 1952. Ooh, Charlie Brown in full catcher's gear walks up to the mound, and who's pitching? It's Shermie. Is Shermie any better a pitcher than Charlie Brown? Why, let's find out. Catcher Charlie Brown says to Shermie, "You realize that the score is 60-0, don't you?" Shermie says, "Uh-huh." And then in the last panel, Charlie Brown walks back behind the plate, saying, "Well, don't worry about it. We'll get him back in the second inning."
Yeah, this was from the second year of Peanuts, and Charlie Brown was, you can tell from the drawing, shorter than Shermie.
Yeah.
But he's actually younger. Yeah. He was always like the young kid.
Yeah, and Shermie always seemed to be oldest, right, of the group.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's actually in the back of Schultz's mind one of the reasons that those characters phased out, because Charlie Brown, as we've spoken about, you know, he becomes more of like an avuncular parental presence for the other kids. He feels like the older one.
Mm-hmm. He does
later. So maybe that was one of the reasons that the other three, Patty, Shermie and Violet, you know, didn't, there was no point for them in the strip anymore. No reason for them. It made it awkward for Charlie Brown. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we have our theories. I think that when Lucy comes along, Lucy sort of dominated among the girls, and they were all kind of mean. Mm-hmm. And I think he thought having all three girl characters being mean might have been too much.
Yeah, and especially when you see him, like, where he goes later with things like Marcy and Peppermint Patty and, you know, being such an advocate for, you know, girl sports and stuff like that, I think he probably did feel uncomfortable having three fuss budgets, let's say, in the strip.
Yeah. You know who Charlie Brown makes me think of in this strip? Mm-mm. Later, Spanky from Little Rascals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's something about him, his attitude.
Just a little bit of chubbiness. I think it's weird that Shermie's mouth isn't open and panel.
I was three. Thinking that too. And then when he says "uh-huh," it's comma "huh." Like, who does that?
Well, I guess maybe he's like shell shocked.
Maybe his response is "huh."
That's weird. I also have to say, I'm really glad. This is where you could get into trouble putting detail in and trying to make something accurate in a style like this, are those hats. Because those look like they were sourced. He has the little air holes all through it. Uh-huh. You know, that probably has a much shorter bill than they do later. And it just looks nowhere near as good as the classic Peanuts baseball cap.
How about gloves? I was thinking Shermie's glove has got a lot of shade detail on it. It really gives it a three-dimensional feel. As opposed to the characters who do feel more simple.
Yeah, and then you could see it too when Charlie Brown, particularly I guess in panel three, but in panel two as well, where he takes the mask off and he's holding it at his side. Uh-huh. And he's not showing the mask like from the front view where it would be completely recognizable as to what it is. You're just seeing it, you know, as if it were lying on its back. He would not try that. This is not him going for those iconic
things. No, not at all.
And I bet this did not reproduce that great in the newspaper.
No, probably not. And how tiny is that lettering? Oh, my gosh. That shows you how huge that must have been in the newspaper, even though it was a space-saving strip compared to the later strips he was doing.
Yeah, I would say, well, if you go look on Go Comic, if you compare 52 and the next one, you can see how big the lettering gets.
Let's do it. June 1st, 1972. Oh, we're way in the future now because panel one, Charlie Brown and Linus are outside and Charlie Brown says, Rerun is crying again. I can hear him. Rerun is, at this point, the new addition to the Van Pelt household, Linus's younger brother.
And in quotes.
Yeah. Like the early Peppermint Patty. Rerun is crying again. I can hear him. Linus says, when babies are hungry, they don't want to wait. Then we see Charlie Brown and Linus continue to talk, but behind them sneaks up Snoopy with his supper dish in his mouth. Linus says to Charlie Brown, takes a long time to learn patience. In panel three, Snoopy just bumps the supper dish into the back of Charlie Brown's head, which gets Charlie Brown's attention, let's say. And then Charlie Brown takes the dish and, with annoyance, walks back towards the house saying, some people I know never learn any patience. And Snoopy thinks to himself, very calmly and self-contentedly, I'm very patient. It's my stomach that's crabby.
There's two characters who look like they were going to make a big play in the early 70s and kind of faded out. Probably to come back strong later, but Rerun's one. Never did anything with it, really.
No, it's like nothing.
And Franklin was the other. Franklin really was just an occasional walk-on character all through the 70s.
Yeah, the Rerun thing is the one that really baffles me because, as we'll see as we go on continuing reading the strips into the 90s, Rerun becomes like the star of the strip. And it's years between decades actually, between the time he's introduced and the time that happens. And in between, like you're saying, there's not a lot that's happening with Rerun.
I think my favorite part of this strip is in panel three. Charlie Brown's response to Snoopy's bumping him in the back of, looks like the back of the shoulders with his dog dish. You have to see it to understand what I'm talking about, but it's a great drawing. And he's got his tongue, Charlie Brown has his tongue sticking out in surprise, but it's very mild surprise. It's just a funny drawing.
It really is. So if you characters want to be able to follow along with us, here's how you would be able to do that in the future. Go to unpackingpeanuts.com and you can sign up for something called the Great Peanuts Reread. And that's us reading every strip from 1950 all the way through 2000. And what that'll get you guys is once a month, you'll get an email newsletter telling you what we are going to be covering on upcoming episodes. So then if you have the Fantagraphics collections, which collect all of the run of Peanuts comics, or if you just want to go on gocomics.com for free, you can type in those dates, away you go, and you can read along with us. So yeah, so that is how we decided these, as Michael said earlier, just, I think Liz hit the random button and, that's where we're at today, just random peanuts.
Hey, Jimmy.
Yeah.
In our last episode, you said that you were going to watch the Snoopy show.
I did.
And give us a report. So I'm looking forward to that. Maybe when we do the main.
Well, I could just tell you even right now. It's real good.
All right.
It's real good. Yeah. I've only seen a little bit of it now, but I think it's the most peanutsy of these things since the early 70s, probably. And what's interesting about it is because there is a little bit more freedom than there were, say, when they were doing the 90s, like Christmas sequels and all that kind of stuff for the networks. Those felt very, they're great in their own way. And everybody who worked on them, I'm sure, is unbelievably talented, but they were really hemmed in by just what they were doing, just adapting the strips as little skits. And these flow better. The animation's real gorgeous and the cast is good. Everything. Yeah. Thumbs up.
Are they adding extensive new elements and storylines versus just taking the strips and, stringing them together?
Yeah, much more so than they ever have in the past. They're allowing, a little bit of freedom, and particularly doing things like there's now a Franklin show coming on, a Marcy show and stuff like that. And I haven't watched all of it, but from what I've seen, I think they really get the spirit just right.
That's great.
All right, let's spin the wheel again, though. June 17th, 1978. Boy, we can really see the size of the lettering now.
Whoa.
Eudora and Sally are lying out at night in the backyard in their sleeping bags, staring up at the sky. And Eudora said, "What was that?" And Sally says, "That was a falling star." And then there's a silent panel as they both look up into the sky. And then Eudora yells, "Missed me." Well, Eudora, speaking of characters that are new that don't really make much of a play, Eudora's one.
But she's Eudorable. look at these little caterpillar versions when they're sleeping.
I don't get her, because usually, I mean, at least the secondary characters have one obvious trait.
She has a hat.
She hangs out with Sally. Yeah. You know, like,
yeah, but
here's the thing. I don't know many people with all these super obvious traits. Like, so I don't know. I like a character that's just there.
Okay, well, that's the Shermie.
It's a Shermie thing, yeah, yeah. She's the new Shermie.
But we had a Shermometer, so we... I mean, this implies maybe she's a jokester? Because is she thinking that's funny?
No, I think she's paranoid because she really thinks a star might hit her. I have no idea.
So she's paranoid. That's why you'd put the Shermometer.
Yeah, she seems a kind of a little guileless, a little... I don't know. She's... She's got some of the...
She's a great design.
Beautiful design, is. Yeah. I think there's a little bit of kind of that, I don't know, Marcy kind of approach to things. It's almost like if she were Marcy's younger sister who doesn't have that more considered life inside, that quiet life inside of the mind, you know? she's a little more simple and direct. But yeah, the design is great. I love the little caterpillar sleeping bag versions of Eudora and Sally.
I love that. Yeah. And I love the little hat, all of it.
And it's an interesting choice. I don't think I would have done this. And I'm always learning from Schultz. So for those of you who are just listening along, Eudora's in the front and Sally's right behind her sleeping in these sleeping bags. And we're kind of looking at them from the side. For the final panel where Eudora says, "Missed me," Sally's completely gone. We see Sally in the first three panels, but in the fourth panel, Eudora kind of sits up a little bit. And if he had tried to draw Sally, and if I had tried to do this, I would have torn my hair out. Mm-hmm. But to make Sally just disappear in that last panel is, you know, it's a bold move by a cartoonist who knows what he's doing.
Yeah, but also I think the head is totally superimposed over Sally's head.
Well, yeah, that, yeah.
You can see the trace of her, Sally's sleeping
bag. Well, yeah, but what he's saying is if he didn't do that and you had the both heads shown, it would be confusing. You wouldn't be able to say,
right.
No,
who's there's, yeah. There's no way she's completely covering where Sally would be.
Right.
I don't know. If you did a cutout, I think from the third panel.
Even the open mouth, I mean, you would have her cheek rather than Sally's cheek.
Let's do it.
Well, that sounds like
it's a
project.
Throwdown.
November 28th, the wheel says. 1971. All good. There's a lot of words.
Hooray.
So we start off with one of them there, symbolic panels. This is a giant annoyed Peppermint Patty and a tiny little confused Charlie Brown, or embarrassed Charlie Brown. I love that. That's so weird looking, but that's a great looking panel. And then panel two.
Wait. When we're hanging in that panel, I have a question. The featuring good old Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Is there's no space between Charlie and Brown. Is that because you always see Charlie Brown?
Maybe.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. They're just put together like the one thing.
So in panel two, good old Charlie Brown and Peppermint Patty are in their familiar position underneath the tree. And Peppermint Patty says to Charlie Brown, "You want to hear something funny?" And then she continues in the next panel. "A weird thing happened to me the other day, Chuck. I had to deliver a message from my dad to a friend of his who works in a barber shop. And when I walked in, one of the barbers said to me, 'What can I do for you, son?'" Charlie Brown says, "That's funny. Something like that happened in my dad's barber shop once a long time ago. A man brought his granddaughter in, and the barber thought the little girl was a boy and cut off all her curls. The mother was really mad. Everyone was yelling and screaming, but those things happen, I guess. After it's all over, it's really kind of funny." The next panel, this is enlivened Charlie Brown. He's actually kind of sitting up straight and is semi-pleased with his little story. Then he goes back to his up against the tree position, but Peppermint Patty is completely annoyed. And she says to him in the next panel, "I wasn't finished with my story, Chuck."
No.
And then in the last panel, Charlie Brown is completely humiliated and Peppermint Patty is completely annoyed.
Oh, this is so life, right? How many times have we done this to friends and family?
Yeah, I feel like this happened the day he was writing this, right, to him. And he's like, all right, I'm going to editorialize a bit. That's a lot of lettering in this strip.
Usually when you look at Schultz's lettering as a block, it looks really clean. This one looks a little more ragged. I don't know why. In 1971.
It's a lot. He's cramming it all in, and he's not going to change his tool.
He's moving fast.
So I think, it looks like a good-looking strip. You know what's moving fast, too? The fact that we have gotten through 30 years worth of these strips, and we don't have that many more to go. Can you believe it? So in an effort to just slow and delay that inevitability, in order to do that, we're going to take a break now, and then we'll come back on the other side, and we'll answer the mail and stuff. So be right back.
Hi, everyone. We love it when you write or call to tell us how much you enjoy the show. But don't just tell us. Tell your friends. Tell complete strangers. Share your appreciation in a review. It doesn't have to be on Apple Podcasts. 60% of you listen on other apps. Some of those apps have review sections. Think of all the poor Peanuts fans out there who haven't found us yet. There are review instructions on our website at unpackingpeanuts.com/spread the word. Thank you for your support. And now let's hear what some of you have to say.
Hey, everybody. We're back. We're celebrating our 100th episode. And hey, let's hear from you guys out there. Liz, I'm hanging out in the mailbox. Do we got anything?
We do. We have a lot today.
All right.
We got a message from John Marullo, and he says, "Hearing you all discuss the intricacies of Peanuts is like a dream come true. I grew up reading Peanuts in the newspapers and in the compilation books, as well as the TV specials and everything else. I never knew anyone who was as big a Peanuts fan as I was. Most people only knew the animated version and seemed to think Snoopy was the main character. As a gay man, one aspect of Peanuts that has always struck me is its defiance of traditional gender roles. This starts with the second strip ever, with OG Patty socking Charlie Brown in the eye while reciting that little girls are made of sugar and spice and everything nice. Of the human characters, the three most sensitive are the three main boys, Charlie Brown, Linus, and Schroeder. Almost all the girls show much more aggressive traits, especially Lucy, Violet, both Patties, and Sally. Marcy, while not aggressive, still defies gender norms in her dress. She is the only major female character never seen wearing a dress, and her willingness to get violent if needed. Whether any of the characters as adults would identify as LGBTQ is a moot point. They will never grow up, so we will never know. Having said that, when my husband George and I were married in 2017, Charlie Brown and Linus sat atop our wedding cake.
There may be a Linus and Sally wedding cake topper around somewhere.
Oh, you have one too?
Yeah. Well, I think that's interesting. When, you know, the idea of what they would identify as later in life. I've thought about this recently, and of all things, this is going to be surprising to you guys, but I was reading this book about the Beatles, and it was weird. And they're talking about A Day in the Life and how, like, there's the verse that says something about, I saw a film today. The English army had just won the war, which is probably a reference to his movie that he was making at the time. But it's also obviously a reference to Vietnam. But if he mentioned Vietnam in the song directly, it makes it less. There's no room for you to put yourself into it. It's nice to have little areas where things are not 100% defined by the artist, because it gives you room to put yourself. And I think that's the success Schultz has a lot of times with characters
I remember as a kid growing up, sensitive kid, to see characters like Linus in the world just kind of managing their way through the world was super meaningful, you know, because it there wasn't a lot of that. There were a lot of characters that were very surfacey. And because there's so much to these characters, you're seeing traits in them that you don't see in other art, you know, and I, you know, it's weird because in a comic strip, it is so streamlined, right? That's comic strip artists are doing things that are, are types. And so they're playing type. And Schultz found a way to make that character. And like you're saying, the pieces that aren't there, I think often comes from the simplicity of the drawing of the characters. And this was famously stated by Scott McCloud in Understanding Comics, where he would say, look at a wall outlet where you know, you plug in your lamp and you see those two vertical lines and the little hole underneath it for, you know, for the plug, and you see a face in it. And these really boiled down characters that are just a dot and a C for a nose and a C for an ear and a very circular head for Charlie Brown. The characters are so boiled down that it makes it easier for you to see yourself in them. And I think that's a huge power of comics. Mm-hmm. But that Schultz also then layered on top of it a complexity to the characters that didn't play to type, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think that endeared him to almost everybody. You know, the universality of what he did is, I think, one of the things that just constantly amazes me and inspires me.
Well, this is actually super interesting. Let's talk about it a little bit more. Like the idea of Charlie Brown. Okay, so it was he talked about, you know, flipping the gender roles at the beginning. And Charlie Brown is this sensitive guy, and he loses a lot. In 1950, that is super radical. And it must have been freeing from people, because like even the male comic archetype would really just be making fun of either the character for not being sufficiently male enough, like, you know, oh, he's doesn't work, he's a layabout or whatever. Or it would be like a hypermasculine, like a Lil Abner or something like that, right? This is way more like a person.
You know, I said Linus, I knew Linus better than my next door neighbor because he just seemed that much more, I could know him better than I could know my neighbor, because somehow it's there. It's there in this.
I have to make another confession though, Harold. All those years ago,
my goodness.
I was your next door neighbor.
What were the odds?
And you never even made an attempt. I'd be like, hi, I like peanuts too. And you're like, shut up, you're not as real as Linus.
Oh, you kept throwing baseballs at my bike. What am I going to do?
I don't think we told that story on the air. Did we? I may have assaulted someone with a baseball. It was the past. We don't need to talk about it now. Say, what other letters did we get?
Well, okay. We got one from Sam Alexander, who says, I love what you're doing, and today I found a reason to get in touch. There was a robust discussion around references to Sam Snead over a few podcasts, notably May 6, 1963. And I may have a bit of helpful background. Golfing great Sam Snead said that he was plagued by the yips for over 55 years. It's a kind of disorder that interferes with putting. Yips were considered to be a factor in his failure to find a U.S. Open victory during an illustrious golf career. In several podcasts, you've discussed Sparky's issues with tremors and also mentioned that his work often seemed to reflect what was going on in his life. I think that's the connection. So that's my contribution, for what it's worth. I love the way you all relate to one another. How respectfully you disagree, a model for us all. Oh, and I especially love when Liz laughs. It's infectious.
Yes, it is.
That's all for now, but I wanted you to know you were loved.
Oh,
well, thank you. That's fantastic.
Thank you for that. Wow, that's such a lovely note. And thank you for mentioning that about Sam Snead. I did not know that about him. And there's so many connections to Sam Snead. And I wonder, I'm assuming that was pretty well known. If you're watching, you know, a golf game, sounds like it's something he talked about. He didn't try to hide. If Schultz knew about that, that's very interesting. I'm trying to remember the year we were engaging with him and if Schultz himself would have been dealing with that at that point, or if he had seen it maybe in his own family.
Well, that could be too. I mean, the yips in general are certainly a real thing. There was actually a Ted Lasso episode about it in one of the more recent, I think the second season or something like that. And half of REM is in a band called The Baseball Project that just does songs about baseball. And they have a song called The Yips. But also, I went to a very, very, very small high school. So take all of this with a grain of salt. There was only like 200 and some kids in my entire school. But like, I was the lead in the musicals. I used to sing. And I remember going to college and like we were like playing music, not like really starting a band, but just sitting around, you know, playing guitars and stuff like that. It's like, I can sing. No, I can't. And like so if you go back and listen to that Charles Schulz 100th anniversary birthday spectacular and I have to sing like three lines at the end, almost killed me. Almost killed me. The yips are real, people. All right. Anything else? What else we got?
So Andrew Cadell wrote and says, "Hey, guys, love the podcast. I listen to it every week while I draw my own comic strip called On the Seventh Day. It's a one panel strip that I've been drawing for my church since 2018. And hearing you guys discuss Peanuts every week is wonderful company while I draw the strip." Great. He sends us the link and I will put it on social media. And then he adds, "Best wishes to you all. And my favorite REM album is Fables of the Reconstruction because I can play the entire album on guitar."
Oh, that is fantastic. That's a good pick. All right. Finally, some quality REM content on this podcast. I think the first REM song I learned on the guitar was Driver 8 from Fables of the Reconstruction. So that is an excellent pick.
Well, that's great.
And Melissa from Beagle and the Bird writes, well, first she says, "This is my favorite podcast."
All right.
And then she says, "I finally got a chance to listen to the Gary Groth episode. I loved hearing the backstory of how the Fantagraphics books came to be. And I was surprised to learn that Charles Schulz didn't think people would want to read them." Go figure. "Thank you for all you guys do. I love learning about the history of the strip."
Oh, well, thank you for writing. And I was, when you say that, and I'm remembering what Gary said. Yeah, on one level, you think that's very surprising. But if you can imagine being Schulz and being at the top of his game in the culture. I mean, I'm trying to imagine this, like if I myself did something and I saw it just zoom to the top and everybody wants a part of it. And then the TV specials have these blockbuster ratings and you're in 2000 newspapers and there are advertisements and toys. And then he can't help but notice in some way the strip itself is becoming eclipsed as he's going on in his life. And the other stuff kind of has a life of its own, but the strip itself, he can tell that he sees the book sales numbers that are coming in. And that really peaked out probably in the 70s, right?
Yeah, probably.
The sales of those little Fawcett Press paperback books. And I'm sure that was disappointing to him. Of all the successes he had, he was somebody who could also dwell on the failures, right?
100%.
And he must have been frustrated to see that people were not buying paperback book collections of his comics anymore. And he's seeing that Garfield, those little half height Garfield books were selling like crazy and getting on bestseller lists, but Peanuts really wasn't in those later years. So I'm wondering if that was him kind of thinking, well, this is over for Peanuts. You know, I'm just not selling that many. And he didn't realize that there was this pent up love for the strip. And there was a real regard for the strip in the sense that it's never been properly treated as a collection of strips. And that would make such a huge difference to people to be able to see it from beginning to end. I'm just guessing Schulz didn't know that the strips themselves had such meaning to people. They just hadn't had a chance to engage with them in a way that Gary Groth helped make happen. And I'm so glad that he did.
Me too.
And we heard from Rich Izzo, who writes, "As with you all, my love of Peanuts runs deep. I was born near the beginning of the 70s, so I started reading Peanuts around the point when it started getting cutesy. I realized it when I started reading the Fawcett Crest collections from the 50s and 60s, not long after discovering the strip. I still laugh at those earlier strips 40 years later. Not afraid to grouch about the later strips either.
I can out-kvetch Michael on a sunny day with an armload of eggs from the Easter Beetle.
I challenge.
I also enjoyed many of the TV specials. Watching A Charlie Brown Christmas with my dad was one of the few truly fond memories I have of our relationship. He loved Snoopy and laughed at Charlie Brown killing the Christmas tree every time we watched it together. So I do hope you profile the TV specials after the final strips. That means you too, Michael. Anyway, keep up the great work. I'll be listening. Warm regards, Rich.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate that. It's always great to hear from people. We did also get one text message to the old hotline. It's from listener Don, who said he is concerned about what we're going to do after 2000. Please tell me you're not going to cancel the podcast. Okay. I think there's a case to be made for we read the last strip and then we never speak again. And I don't just mean, I don't mean just on the podcast. I mean like to anybody ever. And here's why.
Yeah, right.
I realized how many of these podcasts are me going, hey, you guys remember this? And then you guys going, no. And then me telling you the story. And then it just goes on forever and ever. And then I thought, oh my God, maybe we're in hell. Because I can't remember I told the story. And you guys can't remember you heard it or lived it. So it's just this endless loop. But then I realized, well, Harold won't go to hell. Then I realized we're in purgatory and Liz is in hell because she has to cut out all the, hey, did you guys ever? Nope. Blah, 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 cut.
Sure you do. It was on fire. It was right in front of you.
Fire.
Don't you remember that?
And you said, no. I will never forget this day as long as I live. Anyway, so that's
okay. I guess.
I don't know.
Or we could colorize it and just reissue all of the episodes again.
Well, hang on. So here's what I will say this. Don't worry about it yet because we will reach our destination, but it's still a ways away. Okay. That's a little driver 8 for our buddy there. Yeah, so I think that's what we're doing. We're just canceling the podcast. 2000 part 2. Peace out.
Yeah, but when we hit the,
we could stop now.
No, that would be the
when
worst.
When we hit 1999, it's like one strip a show.
I was ready. I followed a podcast that was reading the Sandman issues, and they got all the way to the next to the last trade paperback and decided to quit. It's like, come on, come on. I think they were in a relationship and it may have ended, but come on, suffer through for a few more weeks.
For the fans.
Yeah. Well, the Rejoice guy died.
That's true. He did. Let's definitely not do that.
Let's definitely not do that.
We recently had, also just to let you guys know, we recently had a live event for our Patreon supporters, and it was a lot of fun. We just hung out. We took questions. We asked some questions. We talked about Peanuts, and we laughed a lot. And it was a great hang and a great group of people, and we're going to be doing that again soon. Liz, when are we doing that again?
We did it 2 days ago.
Oh, we did it 2 days ago. We're talking about the new one.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So I'm sure we had a wonderful time. But we're recording this before that it happened.
I just want to say, I think I had the best time I've ever had in my life. nothing was as really soul satisfying as our live event.
Because of my scintillating conversation.
I don't know. I don't remember what you said. So that's our mailbox.
Thank you, everybody. That was great.
Yes, thank you.
So if you want to reach out to us or keep the conversation going, there's a couple different ways you can do it. You can first go to the good old website, unpackingpeanuts.com, where you can write us an email. And you know, just tell us what's on your mind. We'd love to hear from you. We're unpackingpeanuts@gmail.com. You can also follow us on the social media, on Blue Sky, Facebook, and YouTube. We're Unpacking Peanuts. And on Threads and Instagram, we're @UnpackPeanuts. So we would love to hear from you between now and next week. And also, you can always call the hotline. We're getting texts to the hotline. I'm happy to get the text, but I want to hear your sweet smiling voices.
Dulcet tones.
So feel free to give us a call at
717-219-4162.
Add it to your contacts list.
There you go. Yeah. And so that when you're reading your Peanuts and your Fantagraphics books, you can, and you want to shoot us off a hot take, you'll have it right there. All right. So we're going to get back to the strips here where we are just randomly selecting them. Let's spin that wheel. All right. The wheel lands us on November 5th, 1965. And we see Snoopy atop his doghouse, Charlie Brown holding a cue stick outside, and Linus, like, crawling out of the doghouse. Charlie Brown says to Snoopy, "Thanks for letting us play pool in your recreation room, Snoopy." He continues, "Incidentally, a tip came off of one of the cues, so I'm taking it to be repaired." Charlie Brown walks away saying, "And don't worry, I'll see to it that they use only Indonesian water buffalo hide." Then the last panel, Snoopy lies down in his doghouse and thinks, "I'm glad he told me that. Otherwise, I would have stayed awake all night worrying."
I have to point something. Yeah, I have to point something.
Please do.
Mm-hmm.
Check out that forehead. Snoopy. I mean, that's Max's forehead. I've never seen a forehead that big.
It's lima bean shaped for sure.
The thing that strikes me in this strip is, you know, we talk about the poetry of comic strips and how every word counts. And it seems like virtually every single one of these panels has more words than it needs, or it's longer than it needs. And he's really cramming these words in, especially in the first panel, because he has to deal with that little Peanuts logo.
And the copyright thing.
And the copyright thing. Yeah. So I mean, I was just like, if I were editing this, if I were writing this, I was just thinking, boy, did they not call it a rec room instead of a recreation room?
Sure, that's a lot of letters.
Back in the 65, maybe that wasn't a common thing.
Also, you know, he has a real nice layout for, even though he's cramming it all in, the lines are relatively even, and maybe it was something where it would make an awkwardness of the lines being stacked vertically. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, recreation room Snoopy is crammed letter.
Yeah, rec room Snoopy.
Rec room, he would have been better off, I would think. And then he adds the word incidentally in the second panel, which he doesn't have to say. And instead of the tip came off of one of the cues, a tip came off a cue or something like that. I don't know. And I'm taking to be repaired. He has so in there. I just, all these words that, and don't worry, you know, you didn't have to have the and then otherwise is the last word with Snoopy. I mean, he says, otherwise I would have stayed up awake all night worrying. Because it's consistently wordy like that and conversational, I'm sure Schultz knew what he was doing, but I'm kind of surprised. I don't know if Schultz was the kind of guy to go back through something once he's thought out what he wants the characters to say and try to like chip it down. Looks like he's certainly not doing it here.
Yeah, I think, you know, I like using like incidentally is a great word to use in conversation, or even just something like, you know, or likes or whatever. And it's.
Yeah. So, yeah, you did that a lot of Amelia Rules.
Yeah. And it's kind of a pain sometimes because, it's extra lettering and you have to sort of account for it in the word balloons and stuff.
I was guilty of characters always start up. Like,
yeah, I do well.
Instead of them just saying it, I would just start with a I don't know.
I don't know. There's something about it, though, that makes it seem like this one maybe isn't the most, it doesn't like trip off the tongue while you're reading it, but it still reads like Charlie Brown to me.
Absolutely.
And of course, Indonesian water buffalo hide. That sounds like something he read in a magazine somewhere and just like, that's really weird. Because every pool cue I ever used in my life had felt on the front, but you know. I grew up in the Skook, so we didn't have Indonesian water buffalo hide. All right, let's spin the wheel again. And the wheel lands on December 27th, 1950. This is about as early as you can get. And it is Shermie and Patty, and they're standing there. And Patty says to Shermie, "I can't marry you, Shermie." Shermie says, "Why not?" And Patty says, "I haven't known you long enough." And Shermie, annoyed, says, "Well, what do you expect?" And then Shermie delivers the punchline in panel 4. "I've only been alive for a few years." Reasonable.
Yeah. I'm appreciating these really early ones more. When I first encountered them, I started reading Peanuts probably with the fourth book.
Right.
And then went back and got the earlier ones. And I always felt like the first three books were not Peanuts. I would not ever recommend them. I'd say start with the fourth book. But now, it's definitely, it's got a certain charm. You know, the big head kids.
I always like how it's, I don't like that. It's, that's not Peanuts. How do you like the chocolate cake? That's not chocolate cake.
Yeah. Well, some certain things take a while to get going.
Yeah, this definitely.
And, you know, you're not going to recommend start with service number one.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that is, this is actually something that's interesting and worth bringing up. And Cerebus made me think of it. That's an example of someone who, they have done other work. David's done other work. But that's 90% of it. You know, if you're going to engage with his work, you're engaging with Cerebus. Jaime Hernandez, Love and Rockets, Harold Gray, Little Orphan Annie. Mm-hmm. You're asking a lot of your readers when you do one big work. And I think there is a potential that some things can get lost simply because of that. Like, well, where do you start?
Yeah.
You know, that's, right. And that is a tough question to ask. Yeah. You don't, I mean, I know we're doing the read the whole thing from the beginning, but if someone was super casual, I wouldn't recommend 1950 for sure. But what do you think about that? Cause there's so much reward from doing a long work, but there's also a lot of downsides.
Yeah. But we're following the author.
Right.
Who's growing. And learning about the characters as he's doing it. And it's not a novel.
Right.
And, you know, we have the wonderful option, those of us who are doing online comics, is to go back and redo the early ones, which, you know, you certainly, the newspaper, once it's out,
right,
it's there forever. Or forgotten.
Right.
Instantly.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I think Charles Schulz would probably agree with you about these early Peanuts, how you felt about them in your younger years, because that upper left-hand corner little slug line for the strip is actually in quotes in 1950. It's Peanuts, air quotes. It's not really quite Peanuts. It's Peanuts.
That's so strange. So.
Proto-Peanuts.
Yeah, because here we go. Let's spin the wheel again, and let's see if the quotation marks are there or not. The wheel takes us to November 7th, 1956. The quotation marks are gone. We're fully Peanuts now.
It's Peanuts now.
Oh, and it's a good
one. No qualifiers.
This is a good one. So Snoopy is out in the weeds, and the weeds are above his head. And even though you can barely see him through the weeds, you can see he's focused. He's locked in. And he says, by golly, I'm not going to let a bunch of stupid weeds panic me. I'll just hit here and... In the next panel, he jumps up out of the weeds, looks both ways, screams, "Og," runs out of the weeds. And then in the last panel, he's free of them. And he leans up against a tiny little tree. He's clearly shaken. And he says, "Weeds, brr."
Weed claustrophobia. This ran for a long sequence. And really, this was like, for me, when I really started loving this tree.
Yeah.
But if you look at Snoopy in that last panel, there's almost no relationship between that and the current.
If
Snoopy.
You put them next to each other, they could be different characters in a strip.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is why are they the same character?
Well, you could say the same thing about me if you looked at me over 40 years.
You've always been the same character.
It's not like your head shape changes or anything. Yeah. That long snout.
Yeah.
Now I look at it after, you know, seeing 70s Peanuts for the last, you know, many months. I look at it now and I go, boy, didn't we notice how weird that was?
Well,
but we didn't. When we're reading it, like, well, that's maybe.
Right. Schulz says the same thing. He said that he went back and looked, and he the actual word he used was appalled. I was appalled at how I was drawing Snoopy in this era. And it's like, all right, we'll take it down a notch, Chuck. I mean, it's. I think it looks great.
Yeah. Michael, what do you think about the second panel where Snoopy is turning his head both ways all into a morphed Snoopy? But his mouth's not open when he's crying out. You think if a dog could do one thing, he could yell "Og," but his mouth is shut here. Was that typical in this 56?
Oh, I don't know. But I mean, we all grew up reading comics, so we had no problem understanding this panel.
No.
But this could be extremely complicated if I show this.
Right.
to Katerina and say, she will go like, why does dog have two heads?
Yeah, like, why are there two dogs in the second panel? But why is his mouth shut? That's so odd.
Well, it's really interesting. When you do, I think a moment like that is, you can say it's like, because you're seeing multiple moments, right? Uh-huh. So that's why the mouth isn't necessarily open. And you'll see this, I think, Kirby sort of mastered this in the 60 Marvel books, where it's almost like there's multiple perspective points. Like you're seeing the punch, like the fist, in, you know, is one perspective from one moment, but the body is really actually from like, you know, 2 seconds previous or whatever. And like when you're reading this, like Michael says, and you're, you know, versed in comics and you just go past it, no problem. But for me, drawing something like that is where I get hung up. Because when you're...
What do you decide to do? Yeah.
No ears.
A lot of choices go into that. No ears. Yeah. And I'm guessing if he had a taller strip like he did later, he would might have thrown some ears
shooting up.
But no room here. The claustrophobia requires weeds going very high in that.
So
I love the weeds in the third panel.
Yes.
I love how he draws them. They're great.
He's a great pen and ink artist. Like, he could have been an inker if he wanted, because he can get texture. He could have been an inker. He could have aspired to trace someone else's pencil drawings in an issue of somebody. Iron
he
Fist.
Could have been a contender.
Played his cards right.
This was in the book where I first discovered Peanuts.
Oh, really?
In the one with the French fries.
Oh, that's a great era.
And I love that drawing of Snoopy in the fourth panel with the way he makes Snoopy look shaken is his ear looks like it's ruffled. Maybe it's been ruffled by the weeds. I don't know. And the back of the little spot on the back on his back, the little black spot has, it's like it's raised like you had, like if you had fear, you feel the hairs on your arm or whatever. Yeah. Works really well.
Yeah. All right. The wheel takes us to January 29th, 1972. 70s Snoopy is out for a walk and he passes a tree. We can't see what's going on high up in the tree, but Snoopy looks up and says, how about that? And then in panel three, we see what he's looking up at. And we see Woodstock in in his nest, but his nest is atop four other nests. And he is like in the penthouse of the nests. Snoopy walks away saying, Woodstock has moved to a high rise.
Visual gag.
One of my greatest things in life, one of the things I'm most pleased about is getting Michael to become a Woodstock fan just by not getting him, but by just making him read these strips. He was forced to become a Woodstock
fan. You don't get credit for that. I kind of credit Schultz for that.
Yeah, but you would have never looked. Enough. Well, first off, any chance I get to take a little credit for myself, I'm going to do it. And secondly, no, you would have never read these without me badgering you. So.
That might be true. I definitely had a mental block against venturing into 70s Peanuts.
All right. This will be the last one for our spinning wheel of destiny. And it is May 29th, 1967. Linus is patting a little bird, a proto Woodstock, on the head. Pat, 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 pat. Charlie Brown watches this. Then, in panel two, Charlie Brown approaches Lucy, where he says to her, your brother pats birds on the head. Panel three, pow. Lucy just lays him out, punch right to the mouth. Panel four, Charlie Brown is laying on the ground, dazed, and he says to himself, some people are pretty sensitive about their relatives. I love the bird patting sequence. I think that's so fun.
Yeah.
This is great. I mean, I really laugh out loud. I just did laugh out loud. And I've read this one many times. Yeah, it's just Lucy. What a great reaction. Don't have to think about it.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. Look at her legs when she's punching him. It's quite a quite a stance she's got there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that foot's crossed over. I like it. And his weird stars that he draws, his weird shower
little rounded
daisies.
Five point stars that have no points. They do look like the things that you would have had up in the dating
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely, they're dating game stars for sure.
60s. Yeah.
All right, so would you want to explain what we're doing here for the finale, Liz?
Sure, I picked the strip that was printed on our birthdays, except for Michael's, which was printed on his first birthday.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So this is Michael's first birthday. August 31st, 1951, Charlie Brown is hanging out with his new pal, a very tiny little Schroeder. And Schroeder has no shoes on, so Charlie Brown is doing the classic piggy thing, saying, "This little piggy went to market." And panel two, "This little piggy stayed home." And panel three, "This little piggy had roast beef." And then in the fourth panel, Charlie Brown looks out at us and says, "Now what was a pig doing eating roast beef?"
This cracked me up when I was one.
Yeah.
So, Michael, I have to ask you, what was it like, life without peanuts? You predate peanuts.
There was this vast gap in my existence. I didn't know what it was. I didn't realize there were comics yet.
Boy, I just think of Gerald McBoing Boing there, yeah.
It's true that if you read your birthday strips, it will tell you about your personality.
All right, well, what does this tell you about you?
Well, it says I really like strips about pigs. I really like happy pigs.
It did. Yeah. All right, let's see what this one says about Liz. November 18th, 1954. Charlie Brown and Lucy are out there, and Lucy says to Charlie Brown, "You say there's only one son, eh, Charlie Brown?" Charlie Brown's baffled by this. In panel two, Lucy confronts him angrily. "Well, then explain this. Where does it go every night?" Charlie Brown says, "No place, it." Lucy's having none of it. She interrupts and starts laughing. "No place? Oh, ho, 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 ha, ha, ha." Then Charlie Brown's really annoyed by this, but Lucy walks away and says to Charlie Brown, "Arguing with Charlie Brown is so useless. He just can't ever be serious." And then you see Charlie Brown, who is actually vibrating with rage as Lucy walks away.
And this so what's it say about Liz? It says she likes believing things that don't make any sense.
Well, that explains quite a bit. Oh, man. Yeah, very cute. Lucy, at this era, with her pseudoscience and not understanding things, is, but her self-assuredness in spite of it is just great.
That's your actual birthday.
Yes.
And do you remember this?
Yes, yes. I loved it.
Did they line your crib with the comics?
Yes. Yeah. At 7:19 p.m., they showed me the evening bulletin, and I just laughed and laughed.
All right. Here's Harold's B-Dick, March 18th, 1966. Snoopy's atop his doghouse, and Woodstock is, well, it's not Woodstock, it's the proto-Woodstock, is atop Snoopy, as in asleep on top of Snoopy's head. In panel two, Snoopy now lies on his stomach, and Woodstock is now asleep, basically on his rump. In panel one, Snoopy says, "I can't stand it." Panel two, Snoopy says, "My parents had great ambitions for me. I even had great ambitions for myself." Now, the proto-Woodstock is atop Snoopy's nose, and Snoopy thinks to himself, "But there's one thing for sure, I have no intention of ending up as a stupid." And then in panel four, he screams, "Bird sanctuary!" And proto-Woodstock goes flying. The silent scream.
He's silently.
Yeah, right. This time his mouth's way open. Yeah. So I guess what does this say about me? It says that I have pent up anger toward birds. And I don't know. I don't know what this says about me too, that this is the strip where Snoopy has the biggest butt in the history of the strip.
You don't like being used.
Maybe you're the Woodstock character and you just like a good nap.
Well, that's true.
There's nothing wrong with this.
That could be it. I'm just a little sleeping bird who's manages to. Yeah, that could be.
I think that's it. Now, I'm not sure about the science of this theory of Michael's, but we're going to go with it.
Oh, it's real.
All right, so that leaves just me. February 5th, 1972. Woodstock is on a branch on the tiniest, scraggliest little tree you've ever seen in your life. In panel two, he leaves and he walks back. He ends up at Snoopy's house. And Snoopy's on the doghouse, and Woodstock explains a bunch of things to him. And then, in the last panel, Snoopy lies down and thinks, Woodstock wants to fly to distant horizons, but he doesn't know where they are. And then Woodstock sighs. I don't think that needs any explanation at all. I think that is 100% growing up in Girardville. I get that.
That's your life.
Totally. I remember seeing Star Wars when I was 5 years old. And Luke Skywalker says, well, if there's a bright center to the universe, you're on the planet that it's the farthest from. And I thought, same. I get you, Luke. I get it.
And if Peanuts Licensing Worldwide is listening, panel one there, you got another t-shirt, mug, so good. Something. This little Woodstock on the beautiful scraggy tree.
I am a big fan of cartoon trees. I like your Schultz trees. I like your Walt Kelly trees. I like your Bill Watterson trees. But no one draws a scraggly little tree like Charles Schultz. So, all right, I guess that does it. That was our 100th episode, guys. I just want to say I have had fun in at least 97 of those episodes. It has been so cool. I look forward to this every week, despite the ungodly hour that we record these at 11 a.m.
And speaking of 97, we have, at the moment, we have 97 strips of the year. And pretty soon we will have 100 and we will be sharing them.
That's great. 100 strips of the year.
Wonderful. How will we share those, Liz?
I think we'll share them in the newsletter, don't you think?
That would be great. So if you haven't signed up for the newsletter, go to unpackingpeanuts.com. There's a banner along the top that says just basically join in the Great Peanuts Reread. If you click on that and you put your email address into that, we will send you every month at the beginning of the month a list of all of the strips we're going to be covering in the upcoming month. So you can read them ahead if you like, or just see who we've got as guests. That's the way to find out first what's going on in Unpacking Peanuts World.
So does this mean that somewhere in that list is the greatest Peanuts
comic? Must be.
We don't know which one.
One thing I want to do, I think we should discuss that and figure that out, the greatest Peanuts comic strip of all time. I would like to say I want to place Be of Good Cheer out of competition.
Why?
Well, because, you know, that transcends it to me. So that will be out of competition. But the other ones, we can pick the greatest one.
Well, and it's Ducky and Horsey.
Well, that brings us to the end of this podcast. It was Ducky and Horsey. You don't need to listen to the rest. But if you want to, we'll be back next week. Otherwise, we just want to hear from you. Keep in touch on social media. The links are in our description. Call us on the hotline and, you know, call. We want to hear your voice because I worry when I don't hear from you. Other than that, there's nothing else. We just want you to come back next week. Between now and then, have a wonderful week. And we'll see you soon. For Michael, Harold, and Liz, this is Jimmy saying, be of good cheer.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Be of good cheer.
Unpacking Peanuts is copyright Jimmy Gownley, Michael Cohen, and Harold Buchholz. Produced and edited by Liz Sumner. Music by Michael Cohen. Additional voiceover by Aziza Shakrala Clark. For more from the show, follow Unpack Peanuts on Instagram and Threads, Unpacking Peanuts on Facebook, Blue Sky, and YouTube. For more about Jimmy, Michael, and Harold, visit unpackingpeanuts.com. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for listening.
Weeds. Brr.